Good morning. I don't think I'm ever going to get the image of Steve getting funky on the altar out of my mind. Wow. I wish I'd had my camera with me. So it's been really fabulous being here this weekend for this Renew weekend and a chance to get back to my old stomping grounds of Minnesota. My journey with God really actually began just down south of here a little ways at Trinity Lutheran Church of Minnehaha Falls in Minneapolis. And that's where I discovered Jesus as my rabbi and my Messiah. And I remember for the first time when I was about 13 years old, while I was in confirmation, beginning to look at the Gospels for myself and go, there's really something here. I don't want to just say that I believe in Jesus. He seems to be inviting us into the most amazing kind of life, a life where we can love our enemies and not worry about money and stuff anymore and experience this new way of being a human being. And that kind of launched me into both a hunger and a little bit of frustration. I remember once going to my dad and saying, Dad, I don't get it. And back then we had to dress up for church. But we would dress up and we would hurry out of the house on Sunday morning and we'd sit in pews like this. And I said, I don't get it. We go and we sit in those pews and we listen to all these stories about these amazing things that Jesus did and said and taught his disciples to do. And we're just sitting there, kind of like Steve was showing us with the song. When do we get to do the good stuff? When do we get to start to practice the things that Jesus did and taught? And I feel like I've been on a journey ever since that time, trying to figure out how to get out of the building and into the details of life in my walk with God. And I think each of us have probably experienced steps that we've taken like that. About 7 years ago, I thought I've experienced the transformational potency of practicing the way of Jesus, but I don't want to do this just with my wife and my kids. I want to be able to take steps of risk and adventure with other people. So I put out an email to a group of my friends, and I said, I know that a lot of us long for more than just church as usual. We really want to integrate the teachings of Jesus into our lives. I think what it's going to take is doing it together. What if we got together and looked at the things that Jesus said and did and tried to do those things? I was inspired to do that by one of my mentors, USC professor Dallas Willard, and I asked him, how do we live in the kingdom? He said, just look at what Jesus did and taught, and a group of people should just try and do it. So I sent this email and said, here's what I propose. Jesus said some crazy things about money and stuff, like, sell all your possessions and give to the poor, or sell your possessions and give to the poor. A person's life doesn't consist in the abundance of their possessions. When John announced the gospel, people said, what should we do? And he said, if you have two coats, give one of them away. If you have food, give to the person who doesn't have food. So there was this response with our stuff to this good news of life in the kingdom. So I said, let's do this. Let's get a group of us together, and in the next 2 months, we'll divest of half of our earthly possessions and give those resources to concerns of global poverty. So we called it Have Two, Give One. To my surprise, 30 of my friends decided to sign up to do this. We had to break up into three different little pods or groups to take this step. And we kind of brainstormed how we're going to do it. This week it's going to be DVDs, books, CDs. Next week it'll be clothes and some other household items. And there were a lot of things we learned by trying to take a step. You know, sometimes when it's in your head, the idea of following Jesus, it just can go so far. But when we're sorting through our closets, we start to have realizations. Why do I have clothes in my closet that still have the price tags on them after 3 years? Why did I think I needed it then and then I didn't? What's going on there? People started to have to explore their relationship to what some people describe as retail therapy. Like when I get stressed, when I get tired, I buy stuff, and then it makes me happy for about 5 minutes, and then it clutters up my house. So heart issues we were exploring. I had a collection of German figurines called Hummels. If you're over 50, you might know what these are. My mom got me turned on to collecting them when I was 12 or 13, because she said they were going to be really valuable someday. So as a 13-year-old, I imagined this collection becoming worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars for each little figurine. And I've been carrying them around for 20 years now. They've been collecting dust wherever we move. And I was challenged by this invitation of life in the kingdom to go, do I need to hold on to these things, hoping that they're going to set me up with a great retirement? Or maybe Jesus is inviting me to liberate those resources in order to help people who are hungry have food. And it seemed like it makes sense to feel like I could be generous with them. I put them up on eBay. I found out that they were not worth any more than I paid for them in 1983. So sorry to disappoint you. If you've been banking on your retirement, on your Hummel collection, you better make another plan right now. All right? So it was a really amazing experience of us discovering new freedom, a greater sense of trust. We even shared how much we make, how much we spend, what our debts are with each other, to try and support each other in finding God's wholeness and healing in this. We found out that for a lot of us, it's harder to talk about sex. I'm sorry, it's harder to talk about money than it is to talk about sex as followers of Jesus, and that we could really experience some new freedom by taking those risks together. There's a few things we realized in the process. And that, incidentally, that was just the beginning of people getting together in our community to try new things. One was we felt closer by taking common action. I mean, it just makes sense. If we're sitting in the room like this, I'm talking, you're listening, we're not engaging each other, and we're not doing it. It's a bit passive. But when we begin to take actions together, and many of us know this because you're involved in service and in a smaller group in the church, that's where we feel that greater sense of community. Second, we took some steps we hadn't been able to take on our own. A lot of my friends, we wanted to take new steps to live in the freedom of the kingdom, greater trust, less worry. But it's hard to take those steps when you're trying it on your own. But if we get into a group where we can take those risks together, we're more likely to have success. And third, we had a living story to tell. Once we'd done this experiment, when we talked about Jesus and life in the kingdom, it wasn't just a 2,000-year-old story or something we remembered from our confirmation. It was a living story of how we're experiencing transformation in the details of our lives, in the here and now. And so that really upped the game. So I've been looking for language for how I would describe what it's like to get together to practice the teachings of Jesus. And I was thinking it's sort of like a Jesus gym, but that doesn't kind of, gym's also a guy's name, so, you know, that doesn't quite work. Maybe the way disciples to Jesus have always been formed is like a Jesus dojo. So some of you are familiar with like the Karate Kid movies, know what a dojo is. In Japanese, it means place of the way. What it connotes is an active space for learning. That the best way that we learn to do practical things is by getting up and taking a risk to do it. You could have a dojo, I think, to learn how to make cupcakes. You could have a dojo for learning how to build a cabin, right? We could have a dojo for learning how to practice the way of Jesus. Jesus was so emphatic, and we read about this morning in the gospel reading, that the things that he taught about life in the kingdom cannot be experienced without taking steps of practice, and that we build our lives on the rock by learning to integrate his teachings into the details of our lives. I know winter's coming, so I thought building your life on the rock might, for a Minnesotan, might look good in the middle of the Caribbean there. So another facet of this is we learn not just through thinking, but we learn through action and reflection. And I think about how I learned to ride a bicycle. That's a picture of my bicycle that I got in 1976, a gold sparkly seat, banana seat Schwinn. I did not learn how to ride that bicycle in one day. And I had to fall down a lot of times before I got my balance. And the way that we learn to do anything that's worth doing in life requires us to take a risk, maybe to make some mistakes along the way, but to try, to put some effort into it. And that's how we learn to follow the way of Jesus. You've probably heard this cliche that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So if we want to see greater freedom in our lives, a life with in the way that Jesus promises, without anger, without worry, without fear, free of bitterness, free of lust, free of greed, then we've got to get on the bicycle and try, maybe make some spills, but try some new things. So let me give you a little bit more of a definition of what I think this Jesus dojo is. And incidentally, this is the way disciples to Jesus have always been made in communities of practice. It's an experiment. You're taking a new risk. Yesterday, those of us who are involved in Renew took a couple of new risks. One was to practice silence and solitude. So we sat in this room without anybody talking for 20 minutes to just wait on God. For some of us, it was really hard. And people said, man, 5 minutes was too long. For other people, they were like, wow, that was like taking a mini vacation to just be still and remember that God is here with me. We also took a risk to get out of the building and into the community. And so we divided into groups and we went to, around to different places looking for signs of God's kingdom, God's glory, and where God aches for the needs in this community, and prayed together on, did some adventures. It's inspired by the life and teachings of Jesus. Jesus is our rabbi. He shows us the way to live life in God's kingdom. And I think it's helpful to imagine, what would it look like for me to learn to live in my body and in my life as Jesus lived? If you're wondering, yes, that is a picture of me, a la 2006 or so, wearing a bathrobe, but me trying to think about what would steps look like for me to live as Jesus lived. When people get together in a group and commit time and energy to practices, so we're going to be inviting you starting next week to get in a dojo. And in those groups, each week for the next 6 weeks, we're going to look at one part of what Jesus did and taught and take a risk for 7 days to try on a new thing, to stretch out some muscles and try something, in conversation with real needs in the community and within yourself. So one of our experiments along the way in my neighborhood in San Francisco actually was a result of a tragedy in the neighborhood. This is a picture about our project about it. Two of our housemates were going to the store, and along the way, they saw some people arguing in the park. And they thought, oh, it's just what happens on Saturday afternoons after people have been playing soccer and have had a few beers. Nothing to get involved with or concerned about. When they came back 10 minutes later, two people were on the ground with bullets in their bodies. And they rushed to them, grabbed a cell phone, called 911, but for one of them it was too late because they'd shot him in the head. We learned through the newspaper a couple days later what had really happened. His name was Jesus Estrada, a 32-year-old carpenter. He came into the neighborhood to get the oil changed on his car, and when he walked past the park, he saw some children picking on an older person, and he stepped in to help. Hey, you kids, you need to respect your elders. They went home, got a gun, and came back and blew his head off. And so we had to ask as a community, what, as followers of Jesus, what should our response be, or what could our response be to the kind of violence that happens in our neighborhood? And so we also thought, most of us aren't native Spanish speakers. We're a bit over-edumacated. What could we do? We learned about the broken window principle, which suggests that violence happens in neighborhoods of blight, where there's broken, there's garbage on the ground, graffiti, and broken windows, and that people can do something to help the incidence of violence go down simply by addressing those annoyances. And so for the next 8 weeks, when we met together as a community, we'd say a quick prayer on Wednesday nights and then go out into the neighborhood after dark, picking up garbage, praying for neighborhood safety, greeting neighbors. We've always done these experiments with our kids, so our kids were out there with us. And we also decided to launch a poster campaign. We called it Barrio Libre. And I'm going to admit it was a little bit inspired by Nacho Libre, the Jack Black movie of the month. And And it gave us kind of a war cry. Barrio Libre, we want to see neighborhood freedom happen. And so we put on the poster three things that are hurting the neighborhood. People going to the bathroom on the sidewalk. People throwing garbage on the ground. People packing heat. And what could be instead, using public restrooms at the park that are available, etc. And we wanted to cast a vision. This is a neighborhood where children and old people could walk the streets in safety if we all realize it's our neighborhood and we can take ownership and we can do good things that are healthy for the neighborhood. We put these posters up around the park where the homicide had happened, worked with local businesses to have it displayed, and it kind of took off as a movement. Pretty soon we saw in other businesses, people had photocopied our posters. School teachers are calling us, asking for more of the posters to give to their students. So people started displaying those posters at their houses and apartments. A newspaper found out about it, came out and did a story about us. And what we learned is, this is the kind of movement that can happen when the followers of Jesus would get busy with taking steps of practice. There was only 12 or 15 of us involved. It was only 8 weeks. We had a budget of about $500. But we could really see some neighborhood transformation happen as a result of those steps. So then we had to ask, how do we integrate this into our everyday lives? How do we continue to be good neighbors? And that's a last step. Why do we need a Jesus Dojo, a community of practice? The biggest reason is the holistic nature of the gospel of the kingdom. When Jesus announced his message, he said, "The time has come. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent, rethink your thinking, reimagine your whole life, dream it all up again, because there's a new way to be human." And so the gospel of Jesus doesn't only relate to our eternal destiny, where we go when we die. The promise of the gospel is that there's a new way to be human now, to experience life to the fullest, to experience transformation, to move from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light, in the various details of our lives, about who we are, our identity. How can we live aware of God's care and presence with us in the day-to-day of our lives? What are some practices that might help us to do that? How to live out a larger purpose? Jesus said, from now on, don't just think that your life is about making a paycheck so you can have food and clothes. Seek first the kingdom. Be a part of the healing and reconciling that is going on in the world. That instead of being small-minded and living a life of scarcity and worry, you can live a life free of fear and worry and greed. That you and I are invited into a life of reconciled relationships. And I tell you, this has been one of the most exciting things for us, getting people into groups to practice the way of Jesus, because one of those areas is how we relate to one another. So it's been really fun to see people reconciling with people that they've wronged, learning to forgive and let go of bitterness and anger and experience a new freedom by actually following these specific things that Jesus said about our relationships and what's possible. And finally, the gospel of Jesus invites us into freedom and peace. So many of us struggle with feeling stuck in life. Wounds that we've experienced that keep us down, habits that we've developed to handle stress that are hurting our bodies and hurting our relationships. And Jesus offers us a promise that we can experience freedom from temptation and victory in the pain of life to get unstuck and experience new things if we'll learn to let him be our teacher. So I know I've been talking a lot about doing. And maybe you're wondering, how does doing and taking action fit with our understanding of the work of Jesus on the cross and God's grace? Let me just tell you a little story that I think will help with this. But first suggest that grace and effort or action go right together to produce transformation. The Apostle Paul said, "Continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, because it's God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose." So it's God's power with our cooperation that creates transformation in our lives. Grace invites us to do something because it makes a new life possible. So you heard a little bit about my neighborhood. It's not the kind of place that when my kids were 1, 2, and 3 years old, that I could just say, hey, go have fun on your tricycles. There's unsafe people on the sidewalk, broken glass, those piles of human feces. So I decided that it would be healthy for our family if once a week I took them out to the beach. That's the good thing about living in a big city in California is that you can get out to an ocean. And so I packed the kids up, got some snacks and some sand toys, and we walked out to look for the car, found the car on the it's parking's crazy, so you have to maybe park a block from your apartment. Got in the car, drove down to the beach. When we got onto the beach on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon, the sun was shining, the weather was perfect. The kids just stood there with me. They wouldn't let go of my hands. Because there's three of them, one of them was grabbing my leg. And I told them, run and play, you guys, let's have a good time. And they still just stood there. So finally, I had to shake them off of me, ran down the beach. I did a few somersaults. Woohoo! Let's run and play, you guys, come on. And eventually, they relaxed and started to run and play. And we had the time of our lives at the beach that afternoon. Analyze the story with me. Who was it that took those kids to the beach? Papa. Who paid for the car? Who put gas in the car? Who drove the car? Who brought snacks and sand toys? Papa. I did everything necessary for those kids to experience a wonderful afternoon at the beach. Did I make them pay me $10 each to drive them to the beach? No, I'm their father. They didn't have to earn this. I gave it to them for free. But I'll tell you what, once I brought my kids to the beach, I expect them to run and play and have the time of their lives. I don't want them just to sit there. I want them to get moving and experience it. And I even brought snacks and sand toys. It's similar to how the work of Jesus relates to the invitation to you and I for life in the kingdom of God. Jesus has done everything necessary for you and I to enter into a transformed life. And now that he's done that through his death and resurrection, he expects us to run and play, to reimagine our lives, and to take new steps to practice. So I'm going to leave you with 3 invitations this morning that are based on what we read in the reading today about learning the unforced rhythms of grace, a new way to dance to God's song. And the first is, try something new this week. Invite someone to take a new step to practice the way of Jesus. A second would be, starting next Sunday, to join a group at Grace to work through practicing the way of Jesus, to take some new steps together. And if you've been interested in what I've been talking about today, feel free to pick up one of the books. You can also go to JesusDojo.com and read stories about people all over America and actually around the world who are taking steps to practice the way of Jesus and experience newness and transformation. Thank you.